Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. shopify.com/retail23.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm back for a second episode this week in the Rugby Dungeon. With me, I'm Tim, and with him, JB.
Hello, Tim.
Basically, the reason for a second episode is because I just want to make sure you haven't forgotten about me, because Mark Atkinson did such a good job in my stead.
Yeah.
Don't forget about me today. I'm nervous about my standing in,
he's not
the
bad,
podcast.
Is he? He's great. He knows a few things about rugby, does Mark?
He knows a bit about rugby. He's a very affable, knowledgeable chap. And
So just some of the things that you and him share in common.
Yeah, and we've got similar haircuts now as well.
Yes, yeah. What is with the luscious locks? They seem to have come out of nowhere.
Basically, when the rugby season finished, when I did my last game for BT Sport, which was the semi-final, Northampton-Leicester, I suddenly realised, I went, oh, I don't have to look presentable for several months. So no. I thought, I'm just not going to cut my hair or anything.
No, and you're starting to look a little bit like an elven archer.
Elven Archer, I'll take that. Yeah, so curtains. Well, I've heard the 90s.
Elven Archer, by the way, wasn't the Australian winger from the 80s.
Anyway, yeah, I've heard the 90s are back in fashion, so it was either curtains or a bucket hat. But yeah, no, Mark Atkinson was brilliant, and nice one. I am still disappointed he changed his Twitter handle from Sausage Legs 10.
Yeah, Sausage Legs was iconic. But it is what it is. So what were we going to talk about? Because, well, considering I had a two-hour podcast with Phil and Mark, we've not touched on the Rugby Championship. There's been an England squad announced. We've got 1 million emails. Worcester Warriors are in administration. Have I missed anything?
A preview of the weekend's games.
We didn't even preview the weekend's games, yeah.
Yeah, and there are people that rely on us for their accumulators. I know this because we genuinely got a message saying, I've listened to your predictions before I place my bet, presumably to do the opposite of what we do.
Yes. Do you know what? This weekend cost me some money.
Oh, yeah, I gather.
This weekend cost me some money. Mm. My £5 bet on Harlequins at half-time, £200. I should have cashed out.
For the record, Phil's explanation of that decision was absolutely spot on, by the way. I thought it was great. I'm really pleased with the way Ian Tempest officiated that.
I don't have much of a problem with it, to be honest. But the fun definitely stopped.
Oh, fun stopped for you. Yeah, when the fun stopped. Stop.
It hit the buffers quick.
Okay, well, let's just rattle through some of those things you mentioned. Worcester Warriors, they're where we are. There's one complication, one new bit of information that's comes to light today, this evening, Wednesday as we record this, and it's that Worcester Warriors players, are their employment contracts are with a slightly different company than the one that's in administration, and consequently in actual fact, the players cannot terminate their playing contracts.
I don't know who's come to this conclusion.
Well,
because
this is just what I read earlier. Yeah, is it accurate?
Presumably it is accurate on the assumption that the players get paid. Now, if the players
don't get paid, the contract's broken anyway, null and voided.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't see what the big deal is. These guys are not going to play again this year, probably. Well, okay. Now, Worcester as a team, as an entity, will not play again this year, would be my suggestion. So these players, if they're not playing games for Worcester, probably won't get paid. Sounds to me like a pretty good outcome for the players if they're still getting paid and not playing.
Yeah, fair point.
Now, if they do not get paid and these contracts are terminated,
the contract is null and void.
Who the hell is going to be able to create the salary cap room in order to take these guys on?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of clubs in the Premiership who are spending under the salary cap. And if I were Newcastle Falcons, let's say, if I were Dave Walder, who's lacking a bit of squad depth, I would argue, and there's a few injuries in certain positions, I might be thinking, if I were Dave Walder, in a couple of months, there's a lot more clubs are going to have reshuffled their plans for next season to accommodate Ted Hill or whatever. Whereas now, you might be able to get a cut price budget. You might be able to get a much better value Ted Hill than...
Where would Ted Hill go? Where would you place Ted Hill?
Bath.
That's exactly the one that I had. Exactly the one that I had. I think it'd be great at Bath.
They need someone like Ted Hill.
They need a Ted Hill. They just need a few more ball carriers, don't they? Atwood will not last forever, but him and Dunn seem to be doing all of the hard work.
Yeah.
So a Ted Hill would be a great addition. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Other Worcester players, I think potentially a sale of apparently interested in Ollie Lawrence for Manu. That sounds like a great fit.
Yeah, that sounds like a phenomenal fit.
Equally, an Ollie Lawrence outside Max Ajomo and replacing Jonathan Joseph at Bath would be pretty tasty as well.
Yes, it would. Two of the best jing centres on the planet.
Also, I'm thinking Exeter Chiefs, Ian Whitten is coming towards the end. Ollie Devoto, they haven't seen in so long, unfortunately. Yeah. Great player.
Although Devoto is meant to be fit and coming back.
I hope that's true. But Ollie Lawrence, I think, would be a good fit at Exeter Chiefs as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. So Whitten is a bigger lad, isn't he? Plays in the middle. Mind you, Ollie Lawrence isn't a one-trick pony. He can play 12, he can play 13. Yeah. But he's not like-for-like, is he?
No.
That said, it's weird at Exeter because they have a big 12. Sorry. Talking about Hendrickson now. Huge 12.
And the diminutive Whitten.
Yeah, and tiny Whitten. But then outside they have the distributor, which is, of course, Slade.
And sometimes they did shift Skinner to there when... Yeah.
It strikes me that Slade moving to 12 and accommodating... I don't know, really.
Yeah, there's different options. Anyway, we'll see. Anyway, there are a couple of the headline Worcester players, but you've got...
The Scottish lads can go back to Scotland. They don't have a salary cap problem, do they?
Yeah, exactly.
So it might be an overall budget problem, but those guys can go back.
Anyway,
be fine.
Wish everybody there the best. That's one thing. The England squad, no real surprises particularly, was there? In the England squad?
No, not really.
Danny Kerr omitted will be... That'll sting still. Ben Youngs is in. I didn't realise this, but there's larger World Cup squads this time. I think they might have a couple of extra spots.
Oh, is that right?
Might be 33, not 31.
Yeah,
so,
I guess...
Eddie Jones has been taking previously, he took previously, just two scrum halves and two hookers.
Yes, that's right. He did, didn't he? Yeah. And did he only take two props of each?
Yeah, maybe he did take three hookers. I can't remember.
No, so Singleton went.
Oh, yeah, so it must have been three.
So Singleton would have been Hartley.
And George.
LCD. Oh, yeah, of course it was, yes. Yeah. But what he did is he had two props. So he had the two tight heads, Cole and Sinks, and then Marla and... because if one of the tight heads went down, it was Marla's job to play tight head.
That's right.
Excuse me, I've got an awful, awful chest cold. Yeah. Do you have a list of the squad there?
No, but that's easily done.
I do, as it happens.
Oh, okay.
So it's not really a case of who's in, but who's not available due to injury selection. Due to injury. So Barbary's not available. Nick Dolly. Do you think Nick Dolly will get back in?
Such a competitive position, I would suggest not.
I would suggest not, just on name value. But he does seem to have played rather well when he's been in the England shirt, so maybe he's got some credit in the bank, I don't know. Dom Brandt?
Oh, yeah, obviously he'll be back in.
Charlie Yules? No, he's done for the season, isn't he? George Ford's not back till December.
I don't think he will be back in. I would have him back in, but I don't think he will be.
Sam Jeffries is named as someone who's not available for the selection. Was he in a previous squad?
In a training squad, yeah. He didn't go down under, did he?
Don't think so.
No.
I assume this young man will have a space. Mario Itoje?
He's no Christ Chunza, but...
No, he's absolutely not. Nick Azikwe, Courtney Laws, Sam Underhill and Anthony Watson. I don't see Anthony Watson making it back into the England squad.
Yeah, but that's what people said about Johnny May. We'll see.
Yeah, fair. Of the people selected, I'm quite happy to see Guy Porter back. I thought he had a good tour, and I think he's a good player. And I think he's exactly, I don't want to say boring, because that's not what I mean, but he is the agricultural type player that you need to go forward.
And on that, he's selected Manu.
Yeah.
It's irresistible. Manu is the ring in Lord of the Rings.
Isn't he just? I would not play Manu until he gets to the final. There's just no point. Why? If he gets to the final, you're allowed to play him. If not, don't. and Alex Mitchell is the other one, which I'm very excited to see.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him.
And we spoke at length about him on yesterday's podcast, on Monday's podcast, because he's having a great season. I can hardly talk. I'm so out of breath.
What's going on? Is this too much CrossFit?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I've got some chest infection. It's horrendous. I've not been... Last couple of weeks, I've had some infection which made me put on 3 kilograms. I've had an eye infection, an ear infection, and now this. Dying. I never get ill.
Have you been not CrossFitting then?
Don't be ridiculous.
I've got some new grips
for
my birthday.
What have you got?
Some Victory...
Not the fingerless ones.
The fingerless lot, but really long Victory
ones. They're nice. Yeah, I'm thinking of upgrading to something similar.
They are very nice. Right, where are we at? From the weekend, can I just say, I know you talked about it, so I won't go over the game too much, but I went to two of the best grounds.
Christ, yeah.
Exeter Chiefs, oh my God. The noise when that final try went in was unreal.
Do you know, Exeter, they're not selling out that ground, are they?
No, I think there was 10,000 in at the weekend.
Yeah, so the 16,000 capacity, 10,000 were there. They've had two home games, both of which have been monumental. Mm. It can only be a matter of time. I mean,
well, the Leicester game was a monumental finish. It wasn't a monumental game. It was quite a bitty game. But yeah, it was a big finish.
Yeah, but
that game against Quins was insane.
Though, when you walk away from that stadium after Patrick Schickling goes in, do you remember the 60 rubbish minutes or do you remember that one try?
Yeah, I'll take your
point. You came out thinking that was bloody amazing. And then to beat Harlequins that way, I mean, there's only so long the people of Exeter can stay away from that kind of rugby. How could you?
Yeah.
So, I've got a feeling it'll be full before long. Maybe one of the European weeks.
Yeah, I suppose we've got to remember the context of the world we're living in at the minute, and it's no small thing. When luxuries have to go, so I think Exeter are doing everything they can. And what's great is that the hotel is finished, and it's...
Did you ever wander around it?
And it's up and running. Where you have breakfast, I didn't stay there, but where you have breakfast and the restaurant is right up near the top with these panoramic views of the Ex Valley, and it looks amazing.
Ah.
And Harlequin stayed there. So they get the business of all the teams staying there.
Very, very good. Nice. So at Wasps, do you know they've got bedrooms that overlook the pitch?
Yeah, I've stayed in one of those. It's great.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Do you watch a game?
I was working on the game, but yeah, it was cool.
I was going to say, if it's over COVID, would you have to close your windows and then watch it on the TV?
Yeah, presumably. And if in football, you would have to not be... Football's ridiculous. You're not allowed to be in sight of a pitch with an alcoholic drink.
That is ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. Treat people like animals and they'll act like animals.
Yeah. Just a summary of the weekend. Harry Knight emailed contactedchasers@gmail.com. Dear gentlemen, insert obligatory pleasantries here. Without having the exact stats to hand, as the ever-reliable Phil will clarify for us otherwise, 52 tries is surely a record weekend in the Premiership. It was actually 56 this weekend, which is the fourth highest weekend ever. The sheer obtuse number of tries aside, the quality of rugby on show was utterly phenomenal, if you have had the privilege of watching all the games, I would like to know which was your favourite. It was generally a story of comebacks of epic proportions, but putting my Leicester Tigers bias aside, today's game, the pick of the bunch, referring to Exeter Harlequins. Mm. Also, do you guys believe this is the precedent for the future of Gallagher Premiership, or will it, unfortunately, be an anomalous weekend come the end of the season?
Well, I seem to remember a few of the opening few weekends being like this. So last year, I remember saying, God, this is a great opening weekend, or opening couple of weekends. Year before that, the same. And also towards the end of the year, I think it's got more to do with the weather.
Agreed. I do. I also found it fascinating what Mark Atkinson said, in my hope that this might be more the trend rather than an anomaly, in that teams are adjusted to defences with incredible line speed.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I completely, completely
agree. I found that really interesting.
Well, if you just look at the range kicking. Mm. You know, you look at how Marcus Smith deals with line speed, lin speed.
speed de la ligne.
Yeah, there's another email here.
Yeah.
From Sean Caskey. Thought you boys would like to hear about our weekend. I realise we're not very, very close to Manchester, but it is local rugby.
Oh, let's have a bit of local rugby.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Your boys, Tim. Marlow under 16s.
Marlow.
Unfortunately, had to call off the game this weekend.
No.
And do you know who they were playing?
Aylesbury.
Your boys Newbury.
Really?
Yeah, your boys Newbury versus your boys Marlow.
And Marlow couldn't put out a team.
No, Marlow could. Unfortunately, Newbury couldn't. So, yeah, obviously things aren't going quite as, you know, quite as smoothly as they were when you were in charge.
I suppose you still have family that live on the area you grew up, and you go back to North Wales quite regularly. I have this, and I think it happens as you get older, I have this kind of hankering to go back to Newbury Rugby Club.
Yeah, yeah.
I just kind of want to go back. I don't know, I think it's just a bit of nostalgia.
Sorry, can I just say, at the end it goes, everyone loves to love Marlow. Well, I can certainly say Tim loves Marlow, so...
Where did this come from? It's because I went there once.
I'm just saying, you love Marlow. There's nothing wrong with it. You're allowed to support whichever team that you want, Tim.
I'm trying to remember where the genesis of this is. It's like, I can't remember when you started the lines about how Tim thinks the moon landings were...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember when you started going on about the moon landings. Very peculiar.
I've got another email here, just relating to the Bath Wasps game from Tom Wright.
Oh, sorry, just so you know... Also, Marlow beat Reading Abbey this week. But, Mal, please continue.
He says, just a quick one. Tickets for Bath v Wasps on Friday night were £73 for an open-air seat, £45 to stand in the terrace. In the golden days of Wasps in High Wycombe, I could turn up on the day and pay £8 for a standing terrace ticket. I almost threw up in my hog roast and Abba ale when the price went to £10 to stand. £73 for a ticket. I mean, it's kind of what you said Bath should do. Keep this wreck the same, just charge more.
Yeah, well, sorry, did you say that was Bath?
That was Bath.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, going to Bath is like the ultimate privilege. It's the ultimate privilege in the ultimate ground in one of the best, if not the best, rugby town in the world.
£73.
That's seated, right?
Yeah. Mm. Open air. So if it was hammering down with rain, you spent £73.
Well, you know, if it's hammering down with rain, you just got to remember you're very lucky to be there.
Would you pay £73 to go and watch Bath?
No, I'd get in as press.
That's what you need to do. That's what all this is about. If you're worried about the prices of tickets, start a podcast and start badgering media managers.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. No, I think Bath's worth pretty much every penny. It is expensive, isn't it, to do these games when you don't have a season ticket. If you're doing them each individually, the price will rack up. I would suggest getting a season ticket. I've noticed Simon Orange responded on Twitter to some fans about the price of tickets, and then suddenly Sale had some really decent offers. But to be fair to Sale, they always have decent offers. I mean, they are always, they're one of the clubs that are always looking to attract new fans. I think someone like Bath don't have the same issues as Sale. I mean, they are in a rugby town. I think there's a football club in Bath, but I'm not sure how well supported that is. It's certainly not like Sale's situation where they've got United, City, you know, all of the other football interests too. So, I think a bit more money for Bath is fine. Would I pay £72? Well, if I was rich enough to live in Bath, I would, yeah, probably.
I lived there. I had a house. Me and my brother bought our first house there.
Yeah, first of many, eh?
Yeah, I wish. And then I just, in hindsight, is 2020, isn't it? I wish I'd not sold up and, I mean, I bought a place in Manchester instead.
But you always tell me how much it upset you to sell that place on the Crescent.
Mate, Oldfield Park, innit? I love the range of emails that we get.
Yeah.
And this one from Otis just sent us a little menu of berry and rye, blues and jazz bar, and whiskey and gin specialists.
Wonderful.
And there is a classic Negroni in this establishment. It's only a fiver, which is nice.
That is nice.
A Negrose, which is lemon drizzle gin, Chambérisette, Lillet Rose, Suze and Aperol, and then a Café Negroni Menta, which has got coffee vermouth. Anyway, just nice.
Well,
the range of Negronis keep going.
It's kind of pertinent to us because we are now the face of Chorlton drinking.
Oh, yeah, we need to update you on this. We're branching out from rugby into being... I think we can probably class ourselves as drinks models, can't we?
Yeah.
So about a month ago, JB and I went out for a drink, many drinks.
Yes.
And quite a long way into the evening, a photographer from this bar came up and said, "Can I take your photo?" At which point we went, yeah, hold on though, let's do a really corny pose first. And we did one of those poses where we were both holding up our Negronis and looking at each other and doing a fake laugh. Anyway, turns out that is now the photo of this establishment.
Yeah.
Encouraging people to come for a midweek drink.
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. We should really charge them royalties for that.
I know. Signed it away, unfortunately. Yeah. What else do we need to cover off? What did you say earlier?
So you were at Exeter. What was the other game that you were at?
Northampton-Leicester.
Awesome. How was that?
Loved it. Yeah, great club, Northampton. I mean, absolutely battered. Interesting point was made by our mates over at Mall over Dougie there, mm-hmm. saying... And I kind of am inclined to agree with this. And when I heard it, I thought, yeah, actually, I'm on board with that. Yellow cards for repeated scrum pens. Sack them off.
Why?
Because...
No. No.
Because it's one of those things where if you get a penalty from a scrum,
yeah,
that's better than winning the scrum.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. The best thing you can get from a scrum is a try.
A penalty try, maybe.
Penalty, no, push over try?
No, hold on. If you were given, Toc H this weekend or next weekend when you have a game, if you have a scrum,
mm-hmm.
in most positions on the pitch, if you had the choice between, you can have a choice now, you can either win a penalty from this scrum,
yep,
or you can just have the nine take the ball out the back of the scrum. You take the pen, you take the territory, kick to touch,
well,
and have a line out.
So we're talking about something slightly different.
Or you'd
here.
Have a kick at the post,
yeah.
For three.
We're talking about something slightly different. It very much depends on your field position. But this is one of the most beautiful things in rugby, which is when you are in striking range and you're in pushover range, which is not quite where Leicester were, but they were close enough. It is absolutely your prerogative to go back to that scrum and scrimmage again. And if there are repeat offences, 100% give a yellow. And I made this point about the game that there's two types of pressure. I'm going to have to catch my breath. Goodness me. I feel terrible. The first type of pressure was what Northampton were doing. It was just scoring points and trying to run away with it. And that's what they had to do. Leicester Tigers were so disciplined in saying, right, we're going to just squeeze them and squeeze them and squeeze them. And I think, did Northampton end up with three yellow cards simultaneously? At least two.
Yeah, they were down to 12.
Yeah, because that was the game plan. And if you can't put up with the awesome scrummaging which Leicester bring, then I'm not sure you deserve to have all of your men on the field. I'd also say this, like, if you're going to go with some ridiculously good scrummagers, presumably the Venn diagram between awesome scrummagers and awesome lads around the field isn't exact. So, Leicester Tigers have made a decision to go with these guys. Now, I'm sure they are very good at what they do, as well as scrummaging. But they've decided to go with these guys for that exact plan. I don't think we should just take that away. In fact, to me, it'd be...
I'm not suggesting you take it away. I'm actually saying, the opposition's close to the opposition's line where a pushover try is a realistic possibility.
Yeah.
I am actually completely with you. But then what that is putting that in the realm of is you're preventing a try scoring opportunity.
That's interesting.
So, which yellow cards are already given for.
Yeah, and I think actually, so if there's like a middle ground.
If it was on halfway, for example, and you had if there were, say, four or five scrums penalties within the 2 10-metre lines in repeatedly, then it just kind of... Well, no, the advantage is you get to kick the ball to touch, take a line out 30 metres down, or take 3 points.
If you are taking a scrum on the halfway and you win the penalty and you're taking another scrum, I still think you should be rewarded with the yellow card if you take a third scrum, you know, on the third case that there's a penalty. The reason I'd say that is because the risk-reward that you are taking, I agree, theoretically, you'd always kick that into the corner because you're more likely to score. But if you're so dominant at scrimmaging and you're so confident, take that risk, because the risk you're running is someone slips, someone gets their bind wrong, someone gets their height wrong.
You see that before.
Yeah, okay, you give away a penalty.
I take that point.
You've lost three.
So if we're talking about repeated scrums on your own line and you're giving away pens, you're denying a try-scoring opportunity, I'm okay with the yellow card. But just because you have one scrum that is dominant. Also, one thing I remember, and you've talked about this before, and I can remember being in scrums that were getting absolutely pumped, and I can remember being in scrums that were doing the pumping, and quite often you would the scrum that was weak wouldn't fold and collapse, it would just go backwards.
Yeah, we absolutely battered a team the other day scrummaging. I won't say which one it was, but it's only one of three that it could be. And we hammered them, but they didn't concede. Or if they did concede a penalty, it might have been one. But honestly, I can't remember last time we beat a scrum so badly. But because they didn't collapse, because they just went back in a square, organised manner, no penalty. And the end result was we were working our little socks off to try and win that penalty. Actually, they weren't working that hard, and it really caught up with us towards the end. If you can keep square defensively and go backwards in an organised manner, which is, you know, it's a lot easier said than done, then you deserve not to concede that penalty. There's no law about going backwards. There's laws about all sorts of other things, but going backwards is not a law.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Where are we at?
Well, do you watch Australia?
Because I was travelling around so much, I was... what did I do? What was my weekend? I got up... Where did I go on Saturday? Yeah, I got up on Saturday morning to drive to Northampton. Then I drove to Bristol after the Northampton game, stayed in Bristol for the night, and then did the drive to Exeter on the Sunday. And then on Sunday, I drove all the way from Exeter to Newcastle.
Bloody... Oh!
Which is why I can do the podcast.
Yes, you interviewed George... I'll say that.
George McGuigan, yeah.
How was he?
Yeah, he's a good lad. Really nice guy. The feature will go out during the build-up on Friday night.
Oh, cool. First time that you've met him?
Yeah.
What, gone?
He absolutely loves his rugby. Like, he's one of those guys. What I would have really liked is to have just been able to just sit down and have a good half an hour cup of tea and a chat, just to get to know him a little bit, because it's quite a strange thing. I think the media guy at Newcastle said it was, and George McGuigan, I think he's 28, 29 now.
Is he really?
Yeah, I think he's sort of in that ballpark. And he said it's one of the first bits of like media he's ever done.
Wow.
So it's quite a strange thing for a player to... It's quite a strange thing for a player to do, to come off the training field, walk into the club, and there's cameras and lights already going, right, let's go.
Yeah, well...
But he was great, he was great. Good
guy. And it's different as well when BT Sport are asking.
Yeah.
And also George McGuigan is not... He's not an unknown, is he? No. He was previously at Leicester Tigers. He's
England training squad.
Yeah. Has he not got an England cap?
No.
Which I did ask him about.
Do you know what I did ask him about, which I'm hoping makes the cut?
Go on.
I asked him about because I find this fascinating, the fact he's competing for a club and international jersey with his teammate, Jamie Blamire.
Yes.
And the fact that for Newcastle, he's the senior hooker and Pitt gets picked most, and Jamie Blamire's backing him up, but Jamie Blamire gets picked for England. I won't say anything in case...
Spoiler alert.
I won't spoil it in case it is actually part of the feature. All I will say is they're really, really, really good mates.
Well, they're off for now.
Which I wish we'd known, because I think the great feature would have been the two of them together.
Yeah, the two of them would have been great.
But we didn't know that they were so close. So, I know that now.
Yeah, so you're better at a lower standard, but you're better at a higher standard.
Well, yeah. But he took it very well, and there's a potential little scoop. But really? I don't know. Potentially.
Did you see Big Carl Ferns?
No, he's injured.
Oh, what's wrong with him?
Still, he's got another little knee issue, I think. Something going on anyway, but he's not available right now.
Is that your first time up in the Newcastle training grounds? Have you been there before?
Well, they train on the ground.
Do they?
They train at Kingston Park.
I did not know that.
Because it's a 4G pitch.
Did you get a chance to watch them?
Well, the Premiership Cup team were doing the team run, and then, so this was on Monday, and the Newcastle team were, all they did on Monday, they obviously probably did gym work and stuff, but all they did on the pitch on Monday, and I watched a bit of it, was they did like a walkthrough. And when I say walkthrough, I mean literally a walkthrough.
Yeah.
They picked their moves for Bristol, they picked their, how they're going to approach playing Bristol, and they just walked through it all.
So I have obviously watched Sale Sharks train a lot, not so much recently, but I have certainly in the past. The only other team I've had all access to was Glasgow Warriors. So they invited me up to watch a training. I spent the whole day there. It was awesome. Basically, they just train like, for the most part, they train just like an amateur club. You know, an amateur club doing skills. I think they started off their day with a tennis ball, a tennis racket, and then the coach is hitting a tennis ball at, I can't remember which way this game goes. Either the coach hits the tennis ball towards him or something like that. But actually, it's just a drill where the players dive everywhere and try and catch the ball. In fact, it looks almost identical to a schoolboy game. But yeah, that's what they were doing all morning, was just developing skills and playing different size of balls.
That's part of the warm-up. George Furbank, Tommy Freeman and Fraser Dingwall, I think it was, part of their warm-up at Northampton was just Sam Vesti with a tennis racket and a tennis ball. Just knocking balls at them, and they said to catch one-handed.
That's what we do. Well, that's what we used to do at Didsbury. Mm. It's quite a nice sort of warm-up drill, that.
Yeah.
Mm, interesting.
Tommy Freeman's an impressive specimen as well. Just his jaw, as much as anything. He's like a...
He's amazing, isn't he?
He's got like just a... It's almost like got... What's the... Superhero... He's got superhero... jawline.
Yeah, he is
very
impressive.
Very square jawline.
All of those Northampton backs are quite dashing.
They are.
Well, you know, Furbank's very dashing. He looks like a First World War fighter pilot. We were saying, if you can contrast Northampton to London Irish, like London Irish just have these absolutely electric back three, whereas Northampton seem to specialise in developing very well-rounded, very skilled players. Slightly different, equally as exciting.
Arundel is just a freak.
Yeah, he is.
Kid is a freak.
So going back to the England training squad, you notice that the Leicester players re-signed some contracts today.
Oh, I saw three of them, Stewart and a couple of...
So Stewart, Van Portfleet, and another who escapes me. But I wonder how Arundel and Stewart will interact in that back three, and which one you go for.
Hmm.
Do you put Arundel on the wing? Do you go with Stewart with a fullback? Does Stewart lose out for Arundel? Or do you keep Arundel on the bench because he seems to do pretty well off the bench?
I think Arundel's 23 shirt.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
I think international rugby is, first and foremost, get those basics right. And that's what it's just, Freddie Stewart's just different gravy, isn't he?
He is.
Like, be a defensive rock, win the ball in the air. That's what a lot of back three play in international rugby is.
So, yeah.
Don't get caught out. But when everyone's tired, when gaps start appearing, Arundel, 20 minutes.
Do you know who Arundel reminds me of in terms of how he plays and the impact that he has on games? Is a young Elliot Daly. I seem to remember Elliot Daly being able to score from absolutely anywhere, gassing people.
From 13. Well, he started out at fullback, didn't he? And then
fullback, wing, 13.
Yeah.
But I can see Arundel going to 13. I can see him playing at wing, see him playing at fullback. It might not have the all-round skill game of Daly, but in terms of their running and in terms of just their danger from literally anywhere, yeah, very similar.
Yeah. Great quads as well, just awesome quads.
A bit shorter than Daly, maybe.
Yeah, that's good. It's exciting times. When you actually... I'm not an advocate of getting the kids in, But when you...
Yeah, the good kids.
The good kids. But just when you actually start to go, look, England have got Arundel and Marcus Smith in a back line. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, Van Portfleet played very, very well. They've also got access to the whole of the London Irish Academy and the lads that have left the London Irish Academy. So, yeah, they'll do all right. They'll do absolutely... Oh, Fraser Dingwall in the squad is quite interesting. Now, whether he'll play or not, I don't know. I don't know what role he would have for England.
I think if you were going to take it right, so do you remember in the England World Cup winning 2003 squad, Stuart Abbott
yeah.
was the guy who was fairly robust and could play 12 and 13. And I think Dingwall might, maybe if you had to map current players onto a 2003 squad, you'd say if Dingwall were to go to a World Cup, it's because he is the... he fills the Stuart Abbott role. He can kind of do a good job at 12 and at 13.
That reminds me of Porter, though.
Yeah, no, I agree. Porter, I don't think you would take Dingwall and Porter to a World Cup.
I tell you one which I do not agree with one bit is Eddie Jones slamming Marchant. Basically, he had a poor tour. Yeah. It's along the lines of he's had a poor tour and he's got things to work on his game. And I'm thinking this is one of the... This is one of those talented players that you've got access to. You just take him.
Well, I still trust Eddie because I look at the way Billy Vunipola's playing and I look at what he was saying to Billy Vunipola a year ago.
I don't think a thing that comes out of Eddie Jones's mouth is true.
That's odd, though. I wouldn't say that of
no,
Joe
I wouldn't either.
Did he really say that?
Yeah. I will try and get the quote up for you. But yeah, something along those lines.
I don't
lines.
Think he would have slammed him. I think that's a very tabloid way of describing it.
Should
him.
I try and find... Hang on.
Eddie Jones slams Joe Marchant. Actually, what he said is, yeah, he's just having a bit of a rest on this one. He's got some stuff to work on. I actually think more's the point is Joe Marchant is absolute cast iron guarantee to be in a World Cup squad because of his versatility and how good he is.
Well, I would have thought that. So recall him.
This training squad thing is only basically two days of training, and in that a load of them have played rugby, so it's probably two sessions of training is all they've got together. So I actually think it's more likely to be that. Now I know what Joe's going to do. Well, let me have a look at some of the other lads.
See if I can find the quote, but yeah, that's
Let's hear Eddie slamming Joe Martin.
Slam. He absolutely smashed him to bits. Crushed him, is how I'd describe it. No, there's no quote on this one. Never mind. It definitely happened, and it's probably worse than worse than the quote that I made out. I'm not sure. Just to go back to your point, I'm not sure if Marchant is making it, and also I'm not sure that anything that comes out of Eddie Jones' mouth is true.
Oh, he's making it.
I think it is there to manipulate or motivate or do something, but I don't think what he says is what he means for the most part.
I'd have to see what he did say, but Joe Marchant's going to the Rugby World Cup. There's no way he's not. If he's fit, he's going.
Stuart Lancaster's gone to Racing.
Yeah, that's good on Big Stew.
Amazing, isn't
he's
it?
He's done an incredible job at Leinster.
Isn't it amazing?
The Leinster players regard it as... I know Leo Cullen's sort of the overarching looking after the ship, but that is Stuart Lancaster's team.
I mean...
They play Stuart Lancaster's game.
Yeah. I mean,
the players would say that.
The players would say a lot of things because they're an amazing set of players. I mean, it's easy, isn't it, when you're an amazing set of players and they are probably second or third most talented squad in all of Europe. They've basically got the whole island team. I think they could have most coaches there and do pretty well, to be fair. I'm sure he's done a great job. In fact, that's all they need, isn't it? They just need someone competent to run a structured program for them. That's all that they need, really. So, yeah, I think it'll work well. I think he'll do fine at Racing too. In fact, actually, maybe that is the perfect role for someone like Stuart Lancaster. Now, a competent coach who isn't trying to make it all about him, but just goes there, puts down the cones, gives the players something to do, and when you've got players that excellent, then off they go.
Oh, that's the parallel you draw between Leinster and Racing is immensely talented players in both squads.
Yeah.
So you can just let the boys play.
Yeah. I guess it's like just fiddling around with a supercar.
Yeah.
It's a good job. Very good job.
Here's something which I've just spotted, which Now, I'm very much against, generally speaking, law variations, law trials, constantly tinkering and changing with the law. Rob Baxter had a great interview about this. He said rugby has never just let anything sit for any length of time.
He's right.
Constantly tinkering.
And he also points out quite frequently that, you know, every law change that you make, they're just going to game it. You know, it's complex games. So I completely agree with Rob Baxter, which is leave it. Just leave it.
I will say there's some potential in some of these that's happening.
In a
certain series of domestic games in Australia.
It's Queensland Cup, isn't it ridiculous?
Yeah. So basically trying to minimise the amount of wasted time with the clock ticking down. So 30-second scrum call from when the mark is set, penalty kicks, a strict 60 seconds, 90 seconds for a conversion, line-outs 30 seconds from when the mark is set maximum, and it will be a free kick option if you fail.
Who fails?
And you cannot take a scrum if one of those is infringed upon. So you aren't ready to take your scrum quick enough, then it'll be a free kick to the other team and you can't opt for a scrum.
If you've got an injured player?
How do you mean?
We've
got an injured player, can we have time off?
Right, okay. Well, I'm doing that.
Okay. This is where it's... Firstly, there's one that we've been talking about for ages.
Yep.
Literally years, that is actually happening there in this law trial, which is only line-outs where the opposition contest the throw can be adjudicated as not straight.
Yeah, perfect. So weirdly, I was playing this weekend, and that's exactly what happened. So the other team went crazy because our line-out wasn't quite straight. The referee said, look, if you don't contest it, I'm not going to call it. And I thought, brilliant.
Great.
Brilliant. And, you know, we said, eliminate the knock-on. To a large extent, the knock-on is gone now. The only time you see a knock-on is kind of if it's in the interest of the other team. Normally, they just pick it up and play, which is exactly what we want. So that's kind of a law change we don't even need to implement now. It's sort of just done itself. And the other one, yeah, these things seem to sort themselves out for whatever reason it is.
This one said, only players within the line-out formation can be part of a maul formed at a line-out.
No.
That seems like it's really hard to officiate.
Yeah, why bother with that one?
Yeah.
Silly.
I'm not sure about that. And this one also sounds a little bit odd. And again, it just sounds like the sort of thing where you can imagine commentators trying to explain this to people at home. And a scrum collapse, the first collapse, you just reset regardless of what happens.
Okay.
The second collapse, if there's no clear sanction, a free kick to the feeding team.
Okay.
And the defending scrum half cannot go beyond the midline of the scrum, which is like they do in kids' rugby.
Why do we care about that?
I know, it just feels all a bit complicated.
No, I don't see any point in that one.
Hold on. Deliberate knock down. So if it's...
Yep.
Okay.
Yellow.
So up is okay, down is not.
Isn't that what we already have?
Advantage law, three phases and then advantage over.
Yeah. It is getting a bit silly, the advantage law.
Yeah, I'm up for...
I can see that one.
I can see that one. And to be refereed as either a deliberate attempt to catch or a deliberate attempt to knock down will result in a penalty kick only.
A deliberate attempt to catch or a deliberate attempt to knock down?
Oh, right. For a deliberate knockdown...
Yep.
It has to be refereed and the decision is either... The referee will say, no, that was a deliberate attempt to catch
or
that was a deliberate attempt to knock the ball down.
Yeah, I like the standard we already have now, which is... I do and I don't. So... When they say it wasn't realistic, I kind of think, well, these are professional rugby players. They should know if it's a realistic opportunity to catch. It's literally their job. But on the other hand, there are times where a player goes to catch the ball and it's just not on, and all that happens is he knocks the ball forward. That is a deliberate attempt to catch, but it also is a deliberate interference in play. I like the standard we've got.
An interesting one on officiating. Like I say, I thought Ian Tempest got the... that decision at the end of the Exeter Harlequins game correct, in that he couldn't conclusively overturn the on-field decision. Also, I would point out Harlequins fans conveniently forgot that Caden Murley's first try for Quins was...
Caden Murley, what a player.
What a player. That was as forward as the pass to Schickling was.
Why is Caden Murley not in the England team?
Because Jack Knoll is.
I'd go with Caden Murley.
Either or. And again, listen to Mark Atkinson's thoughts on the pair of them for more on that one on the other podcast. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I heard someone say an interesting officiating point. This is like one of those nausy...
Ooh, yes,
please. You're a referee, and what do you do? Joe Marchant's try, awesome try.
Yep.
And got me points on Fantasy Rugby Draft.
More importantly.
But great try. But someone pointed out that Joe Marchant knocked the ball in field, knowing that he had to get his feet back in the field of play before he could catch the ball and put it down.
Yeah.
Awesome awareness and awesome skill. But someone did point out that, like, well, that is, he got an advantage from knocking it on, even though he regathered it. So that arguably should have been counted as a knock-on.
I don't think it's a knock-on unless you drop it or... Oh, yeah.
Unless you... Because,
get an advantage from it.
Unless you get an advantage from it. Because a hypothetical situation is if you're sort of juggling the ball with your hand to try and regather it, if you accidentally, in the process of doing that, if you tap it over a defender...
So do you know why this
and
came
then catch
about?
It? No.
Lawrence Delalio against Italy.
Or did he just...
He just sort of bobbles it about and he throws it over an Italian's head and catches it and carries on.
Like,
yeah, we can't have that, really.
We can't have that. So that's the principle of it. If you gain a material advantage from a knock-on, even if the ball doesn't touch the ground and you eventually regather it, which someone has said, well, is that not kind of what Joe Marchant did?
Yeah, I think actually...
There's an argument for that.
No, I do agree with that. When you look at it and you think, that's what's written. I wouldn't do it. But that is what, you know, as Mark Atkinson said... Sorry, Dad, it's just what we do.
That was my favourite bit of the podcast, actually.
Yeah, it is what it is, all right?
Just a professional, an actual England international saying to his dad, yeah, mate, that's just how rugby is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see my Twitter thread this weekend regarding the club games?
Yes, and what's cool to see on that is that the brilliant John Newcombe of Rugby Paper, Rugby Times, and... also does some work for BT Sport as well. John Newcombe, he is going to do more investigation of this, crunch the numbers, and I think you'll probably end up seeing a Rugby Paper article based on what you're talking about, which is that lower league teams, in fact, this is happening with many lower league first teams, but certainly lower league second, third and fourth teams, if they have them, there are whole leagues where all fixtures on Saturday cannot be fulfilled and there are walkover victories for one side or another.
Well, it's just shocking. I mean, this was a whole league which just did not play. Now, I'm trying to remember which one the league was, but as soon as I saw that, I thought, yeah, there's... I mean, it does feel to me like the standard is lowering. And, you know, the fact that I'm still playing at 38 probably suggests that, does it not? Maybe? There's a lot more called off games lower down, but I just got sent a screenshot of a league down south, which is, you know, populated by third and second teams. But you know, for a lot of clubs, that is the lifeblood of their club. If you don't have a second team, you don't have a first team. So I've always said that. And then you got all these armies of people that used to play. Like when we were at Broughton Park, we had third team, fourth team, and a fifth team every single week. Mm. You know, Preston had. Ones, two, threes, fours and casuals.
And I'm currently keep getting peppered with messages for, please, if you can, just get your boots on and come and play at Broughton Park. They're struggling to get three teams out. And like you say, it wasn't so long ago, five was comfortable.
Five, yeah, five easy. You know, so, yeah, it's a bit of a worry. Although I would also add this, and this is a little bit controversial, okay, after I've said, yeah, everyone go and play for your third team and fourth team. Sometimes... I do think that third teams sort of... there's nothing wrong with having a social team, but I often think, like, what is the point in having a club within a club? Why don't you just have a different club which plays at the appropriate level that you want to play at rather than have the third, fourth and fifth team of Broughton Park?
That's interesting. So that could... Is that the solution? Yeah, because I was thinking, does this mean that some clubs aren't needed? But actually, probably what it does mean is, if you have a third team, you should probably be populating another nearby club.
Yeah, so like, you definitely need a second team. So second teams are absolutely vital. So you've got your first team, you've got your second team every week. Now, if you've got a third team because you've just got this massive squad and they've got to play, yeah, okay, fine. But then what I tend to find is there's also situations where you get thirds and fourths who, as a regular trainer, you never see these guys. You don't know who they are. They're not your mates. You know, you might bump into them on a Saturday and you might become friendly that way.
That's the kind of level I would say that, because you're saying second team's important for the first team, but that is assuming that everyone wants to commit to... wants to commit, and actually I think a lot of the people that turn up for third teams are the guys that go, I have no time to give outside of the 80 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, and also maybe you've done your time, haven't you, for the first and the twos, and you know, you just show up every other week.
You just want to keep playing, and that's all the time you can commit.
Yeah, that's fair, and I guess, yeah, actually, that is a good point. And to go to a different club or set up a different club, but... yeah, there's a lot of things involved with that. You know, you need a new committee, you need a new treasurer, you need a new clubhouse.
If anything, this is indicating that there are more clubs than are necessary at the moment because there's fewer people involved.
I heard a story the other day, and I can't tell you which county it is. And I don't know how I'm going to tell this story without giving it away. Ooh, but there is effectively a ghost club in England.
What?
Yeah. So I'm not... they don't have a pitch because they've always played on like a school pitch, school change rooms, so on and so forth. I think their clubhouse was a pub. They've still got a full committee, but they've got no players. And the reason they exist... the reason that they exist is... basically for administration regions to keep certain administrative regions of the RFU going so they don't merge. And that's literally their job. Isn't that amazing?
To keep certain regions...
yeah, so you got to have a certain amount of clubs in each region. Or that region would merge.
What?
And then, you know, you'd lose, like, you know, funding or influence or a council seat or something. So they keep this club and it's all just carries on. They've got no players, but they've got like
no
treasurer,
fixtures, no players,
presidents.
Wow,
kind of club that I'd want actually. I might start my own club.
Do they get offered to apply for tickets for internationals at Twickenham?
I have no idea. I have no idea, but I kind of like the cut of their jib. I might get their top. I might get some. Might get some stash.
And if they don't have any stash, they'll have a constitution with a club kit.
You'd have thought so, yeah.
That'd be cool. That'd be a cool kit to have. How rare is that? What kit is that? Oh, who are they?
You can't find these anywhere. Guys. What are they called? Oh, I'll get the name of them.
You can't say though.
Yeah, I won't. But as soon as I remember, I'll tell you off air.
Oh, interesting. And if you want a little project, go trawling up and down. Oh, no, they're not on any league table.
Nope, because they don't play.
Wow. Is there a list of rugby union-affiliated clubs?
There must be somewhere.
Yeah.
There must be.
I haven't got the time or inclination to work out who it is.
Someone will.
Yes.
Someone will find them.
Someone will. Right, should we preview the weekend's games? Is there anything else?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's get into it.
All right, so Friday night, I will be at Kingston Park.
You're getting a lot of work. Has someone died? Is someone ill?
It's just this couple of weekends. It'll go dry again. I think potentially, if you think I've had work at opposite ends of the country.
I see.
Yeah, and the trains are absolutely bobbins as well.
Has boots will travel.
Well, there used to be a plane from Manchester to Exeter. Not anymore.
No, it's not. It goes to. There's one to Newquay, but that's no good to you, is it?
No. So, yeah. Anyway, I love going to Stanley Park, so I was quite happy to drive down.
It's finally good that BT Sport have realised where their main talent is.
Yes, so Newcastle are struggling.
Yeah, I think... hate to say it, but I think Bristol are going to smash them. Gives me no joy to say that.
Well, Newcastle, what's quite interesting when you look at how they've got on so far in the three games is, I mean, the game against Worcester was a different kettle of fish, but in the other two games, one of which was, who did they play, Leicester and Quins?
Yeah, so the Leicester game was good. No, sorry, the Quins game it was that they had a good showing.
They hang in there for like 60 minutes and then they just get pumped in the last 20, which says to me they don't have the depth of squad. That just,
it tells
of other
me,
clubs.
Yeah. It tells me it's probably, they're probably a fairly good team, but they're about 10% off. And as we said with Mark, like the top seven, there's maybe 5% between them. So, you know, that would account for why they do okay. It's not like they're going out there and embarrassing themselves. They're not London Welsh. Far from it. They're a good team. But, you know, you don't need to be off by much to start losing heavily in the Premiership.
Whatever percentage they are off is probably the percentage less that they're spending on salary.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Yeah, maybe even more. They might even be overachieving.
What would you say their
measure.
Salary cap spend is then?
Well, if the salary cap spend is 5 million, is it?
Yeah, about that.
I wouldn't mind bet. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if we found out that Newcastle are spending 4, let's say they're 20% under.
Yeah. And then the top 7 are all spending up to it, I would say.
Yeah.
Probably everyone beneath that. Maybe Wasps aren't. Maybe Worcester weren't, but they're not.
That could be
soon.
That could be 4 international players.
Mm.
Or 4 or 5 exceptional players. 6. It could be half of a very good team.
Well, I think it just shows. I mean, you've got the very best teams in the country putting 40 points on each other in the same game. So if you're not up to snuff and they're doing that to each other, you're going to be in for a long, painful season. And that's the thing with the Premiership. If you're slightly off now, you're going to get absolutely panned. Absolutely panned.
Mm. And sometimes, the matchups and styles is really, really interesting now. Like, again, Northampton will go and, well, they beat London Irish fairly comfortably and then got absolutely pummeled in the tight game by Leicester. So it's the styles and the matchups are really interesting. So we've got Friday, Newcastle, Bristol. We're going away win.
A heavy away win, I'd say.
I think it will be an away win, but by what, 8 or 9 points. I think my guess is Bristol might change a few things up. Although, of course, now everyone's looking at where was Worcester in their fixture list, because you get an extra bye week.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're not just reorganising everything to try and get as many games as possible.
It depends what plans of people have in place. And that would make sense. But is that not a bit of a logistical nightmare if you've announced fixtures and then you have to re-juggle them all?
I guess you could do it for the second half of the season.
I think teams might not mind having a second bye week. Oh, it's a bit of a mess. It's a bit of a mess. Anyway,
well, no, hang on. Is it a second bye week? Yeah.
Well, yeah, Gloucester. So Gloucester, effectively, have got a second bye week now.
And who else?
Gloucester have played 2 games, right? Because they had a bye week last week. No. Did Gloucester have a bye week in round... Yeah, round 2, Gloucester had a bye week, I believe.
Yes.
And now they played round 1.
Yep.
Rested round 2. They played round 3. And now they're resting round 4.
Yeah, you're right.
Because they would.
But we're
going to
be in a situation, aren't we, in rugby, where there should be 2 teams resting some weekends. Because you'll have the team on their natural bye week and the Worcester bye week too.
Correct. But then what if that fixture's already happened or is scheduled another time? It's an absolute mess. I mean, it's just a mess having 13 teams in the league anyway.
Yeah, well, at least we don't have to worry about that.
Well, yeah, going forward. Well, we don't have to worry about it. But anyway, we've got London Irish West v London Irish... So Gloucester Worcester not happening. We've got London Irish West v London Irish East.
Big London Irish win.
London Irish win. We've got Sale versus Exeter.
This
tasty.
Yes.
Meaty
yes.
game.
Contact everywhere.
Oh, physicality all over the shop.
Sale will win this.
I'm inclined to agree with you.
Sale at home. Do you know what? I don't even have a game this weekend. I might go and watch it.
I would go and... I might go and watch that.
You're not jet setting all over the country?
No, I'm coming back from Newcastle on Saturday.
There you go.
I could get back for that.
And then some Negronis and get papped. Oh, again.
Hello, get papped again. I'm going to go home win as well. Saracens v Leicester, another meaty encounter.
I think
this is a live game on BT Sport.
This is
all the
very...
more reason to see Sale Exeter because Saracens Leicester's live on BT, so you can record that and
exactly
come back and watch it after.
I feel that this is going to be a fascinating game of chess. The two coaching setups that know exactly what they're doing, and also one coaching setup that knows everything about the other coaching setup. So there's nothing that Borthwick will not know about Saracens. Maybe Saracens don't know everything about Leicester.
All things being equal, I would say Saracens being at home, and you think back to the final in June, Leicester personnel-wise have dipped a small, but... Only two people, but that a significant two people in Ellis Genge and George Ford, whereas Saracens are exactly the same. I will go Saracens edging that one.
Why do you think that the conditioning staff at Leicester Tigers might dislike Richard Wigglesworth?
The conditioning staff at Tigers?
Yes.
Might
dislike Richard Wigglesworth?
I wouldn't even hazard a guess, because Richard Wigglesworth's a player coach now, so...
He is a player coach. You're getting closer.
He doesn't think he needs to do fitness?
Quite the opposite.
Really?
He doesn't have to get someone, but they come in early, so he can do his fitness before he starts his job as a coach to coach the team. So they've always got to send a conditioner just to make sure Wiggy's got his fitness topped up at 4:30 in the morning or something ridiculous. You're on the Wiggy show. In fact, I suspect they play drinking games on the weekend, the Leicester conditioning staff, and the prize is you've got to work with Wiggy for the rest of the week.
They've got some great characters in that squad, haven't they?
Yeah, the Wiggy shift.
What would you go with, Saracens or Leicester? What are you
I think I'm going to go Leicester.
Okay.
I'm also going to Saracens, but I've changed my mind. Leicester.
Sunday is Quinns Northampton.
And 1 million points each.
Yeah, and we talk about matchups and styles. Quinns were without Joe Marler at the weekend. I think that would have made a difference for them at Exeter because the scrum and line out creaked. Do you know Harlequins in the first two games had a total 100% 24 out of 24 line out? And then it went completely to pot against Exeter. So they'll be focusing on set piece in their setup. I think Quinns will bounce back and win. And I think, because these two teams are 1-1, lost 2. One of them is going to be in a position where they've lost 3 out of the first 4 games. And I think that's going to be Northampton.
Do you want to talk about ULC for a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction
Sure.
Of a second? So, as I understand it, I'm just going to make sure I've got this absolutely right. Oh, you're seeing their second week or third week now?
I think they're on round 3 now.
Yeah, so Munster have started with 2 opening losses, which I'm disappointed with. I'm really disappointed with. Because they are coached by one of my favourite coaches. So that is a shame. Dragons actually won, which is incredible. Finally, they won. And did Zebre beat someone on Saturday?
I know they pushed a weak Leinster team. Well, weak. There's no such thing as a weak Leinster team, but they pushed Leinster close.
Let me just find out.
Don't know if they lost. But Friday night's game in the URC is Ulster v Leinster, which, if they put out good teams, could be worth watching.
Yeah. I mean, I've not... Yeah, Dragons beat Munster. Sorry, that's what I was thinking of, which is... Well, I mean, look, there's a lot of things going on in the world. But, you know, Nord Stream 2's blown up. Financial crisis, but nothing is more unexpected than Dragons beating Munster. Nothing.
What other games are looking out for?
Well, that's it, because the championship is the rugby championship is over. It's just pure domestic rugby now until November, which I'm all for.
So there we go. That's the weekend. Any other business? I need to commit to a TV show because I haven't filled the Ozark and then Better Call Saul void in my life.
Well, you want to talk about voids, right? So on Tuesday, I finished the last of my exams. So I decided I was just going to do three financial planning exams, all of which allegedly require 150 hours worth of study. And I tried to cram it in all in, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks. That's just what I've been doing. And now it's come to an end. I feel empty and lonely. I actually miss it.
When do you know how you got on?
6 weeks' time. But, yeah, I literally every waking second outside of CrossFit and...
Podcasting
and rugby, so about an hour a day, was dedicated to study. And now I've got absolutely nothing to do. Absolutely nothing to do.
Liberated.
Weird. Well, actually, that's not true. I've actually got to see clients and do financial planning work now. But, I need something. I need something else. Today, I was thinking, right, I'm going to come home. What should I do? And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to start up jiu-jitsu again. And then I remembered that I had this. But yeah, that's what I might do with my time rather than get into boxer. Yeah, well, I might start jiu-jitsu again.
One of the banes of my life is I spend 4 days a week. I spend about 5 or 6 hours on a train. Which, I think how much I could get done if I wasn't doing that.
Well, if I had your profile and I was on a train for that amount of time, I think I'd be sending off I'd be doing an article a week. Make that train ride pay its way.
I do plenty of work. And in fact, I mentioned to you, I've been...
Very exciting.
I've been doing some writing, which I think might come to some fruition. So we'll see.
Excellent.
They're the fixtures. That's what's going on. contacteggchasers@gmail.com is the email. Enjoy the weekend's rugby. We'll be back. I think we're all back as normal. Are we, the three of us?
I hope so. That is certainly the intention.
Yeah, I don't think...
Hopefully it sounds as bad as this.
Oh, my Broughton Park... After on Sunday, my Broughton Park under-15s will have taken on Phil's Sedgley Park.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, interesting.
Now, Sedgley Park lost to someone this weekend. I think it was the women losing to a team up in Yorkshire. And I can't remember what they're called, which is quite annoying.
Oh! In the Premiership Cup, it's worth saying, did you notice who made a return for Bristol?
Ibitoya.
Not Bristol, Gloucester.
Oh, the boy, the absolute boy.
Jake Pelledri.
Yes, he's got 20 tries.
He scored a try.
Good lad.
He's back. He's playing rugby
again.
That's
great news. That is genuinely great news.
Absolutely awesome. Really pleased about that.
Yeah. Actually, I will say this, I've really enjoyed the Prem Cup.
Having a bit of midweek rugby, I love it.
Yeah, and if it has to be the Prem Cup, so be it. I watched the Leicester-Northampton game yesterday. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
So, right, so let's wrap it up.
We're done. Thank you very much. contactsegregations@gmail.com. Oh, you know this stuff. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.